So important was the colored vote on Republican issues and candidates, the town council about 1890 voted to close in the corporate limits so as to exclude most of the Negro voters. The original southern founders included much of the area in the vicinity of Jefferson Village, but later were drawn into the old Fairfax Road that is now South Washington Street beyond Hillwood Avenue, a decision which is regretted by those who would like to have a larger tax-producing area. In fact, I kid town manager Johnson when they were trying to annex more property, you know. They had it once, but in order to eliminate the Republican voters, the gerrymandered town brought the corporation in, but they did it funny. They brought the corporation in, but there was a Birch family way over here somewhere, so they made the line come through the Methodist Church there, Galloway Church, go way over and get the Birches, and then go down to the Seven Corners and get somebody, and then come back. And in recent years, they've been trying to get them, and the Fairfax County objects to it. I said so important was the colored vote that the town council voted to close in the corporate limits, and so on. Many Negro citizens have been in the defense units for our nation during the Civil War strife. Some few served the South as cooks and guides. Many, however, in the army. Some were wounded and killed in the Falls Church facility. Several of them were killed right in the skirmishes around here. During the Spanish-American War, several Falls Church Negroes joined the 9th Ohio Regiment of Volunteers under the command of the first Negro West Point graduate to obtain the rank of colonel. That was a major at that time, Major Young. He was the first Negro to graduate from West Point, and he had charge of a battalion of the 9th Ohio's. And this Camp Alger was situated, as I said, on this palm by a colored man named Norman, who came here with Sherman, and the Colonel, General Sherman's brother, who was Secretary of Treasury, and he brought Norman on here, and then Norman eventually bought this land that we bought after that, and then we sold to the people who have this newfangled cemetery up there. But that was a very brilliant sight on in 1898. I used to go up early in the morning and you see the tents of the various regiments. In those days it was much color before they brought the khaki in, and you see one regiment that would have blankets striped in red over every tent through the area, and over here was blue or green. It was a very beautiful sight. However, they didn't stay here long, because at that day there wasn't much known about how to prevent typhoid fever, and the soldiers were dying so rapidly from typhoid fever that they moved Camp Alger almost overnight up to Middletown or Middleburg, Pennsylvania. And in fact, that's what helped to break the man that we bought the farm from, because he had put out so much improvement, and then they moved it away. And there's another, the health angle in this place. I have seen a member in some families die almost every year from typhoid fever with infected wells. And right where Heckinger is on the street in which I live, there was a spring. And I used to see the people who used to bring milk back to wash, take milk to Washington, take their cans and wash it in that spring, you know. And there was typhoid in that family. And at the Gundry family up there, there was typhoid. Miss Gundry had a school for retarded children right across the street from me in that area between there and Broad Street. And they died very frequently from typhoid fever. In fact, I think my two children, who were just babies, were the first ones to get anti-typhoid shots from a Dr. Smallwood, who lived over in East Falls Church. And we were always afraid of typhoid, because the water of the stream that ran through from the Gundry track ran right by my place. I used to have my garden down where that first liquor store was built, right across from the Plymouth Chrysler place. The first liquor store was built there, and they moved it to the other place. Funny thing about the liquor store, you know, in those days, the women of the town, who organized what they call a Village Improvement Society, the white women, they fought the only saloon, broke it up, and they had a law passed that this was entirely dry county. And an interesting sidelight on that, there was a Colonel Campbell. I always remember him because he killed a colored man in the bullet. I used to always look at the hole in the door of this little house in which I lived, where he shot him across the street. Well, this Colonel Campbell, I don't know what his job was in Washington, but he owned practically all the land except this farm I mentioned where the soldiers camped on the Spanish-American War. Just before the contract was signed, or before the soldiers came, we used to see great wagon loads, these long loads of wagons, going with something covered over up to his farm. And when the contract was signed and it was opened, lo and behold, all the liquor you wanted was being sold up there. He had gotten a contract by which they kept his little square piece in there, covered by the federal contract, or they couldn't do anything with it.
Do you know what Ohio Richmond that was? You said the number there, 9. Do you know what place in Ohio the regiment was from?
Ninth Ohio, I don't know. It was the Ninth Ohio. It was all color troops.
Oh, I was wondering if it was lighter colored there.
And it not only remembers from Ohio, because a number of my relatives enlisted when it came here. And this Colonel Young, I said, he became colonel, but they never would make him general. A friend of mine, the two friends of mine, they were now General Davis, D.O., and his son, one of the main Air Force generals. But Colonel Young wanted to be a general, but the policies were such then they didn't want a Negro as a general. So during Teddy Roosevelt's administration, they said he was unfit. To prove his fitness, he rode a horse all the way from Ohio to Washington to show that he was fit. But even then, they never appointed him. They made him commandant at some of the schools, and he was ambassador to Liberia. And he lived at his home was in Wilberforce, Ohio, near Dayton. My people all came from Ohio. My wife's people, they lived in Wellington, Oberlin. In fact, they were the main storekeepers in the little town of Wellington. Three corners of the place, one was a baker and one had a big grocery store and one was a library in the town. And when you spoke of Ohio, it made me think of it. During the last half century, colored citizens have gradually come to the realization that racial segregation and discrimination were barriers to their civil and political rights under the Constitution of the United States and opposed to the preamble declaration of the Virginia Constitution. Hence, they have been active in controversy. In 1915, I came out in 1910 to live permanently, the town council sought to apply the principle of residential segregation based on race. A line was drawn that would have made illegal for Negroes to reside in homes north of Fairfax Street. Immediately, these colored citizens organized what we call the Colored Citizen Protective League. The protest was argued before the Circuit Court of Fairfax, and after extended legal argument, the town was enjoined from enforcing its ordinance. Shortly thereafter, the Supreme Court of the United States outlawed this form of segregation. That is, they attempted to take a whole block. And if you lived, as our family did, next to the Old Falls Church, if anybody moved out of it, only a white person could occupy it. The same way with the white citizens who lived in what must have been designated as a colored area. If they moved out, only a colored person could live in it. Well, that was outlawed. Feeling the need for the continued watchfulness, a chapter of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People was formed, and the charter granted the local group as the first rural chapter organized in the nation. So active has been that about 10 years ago, the local chapter, which is now the Fairfax County chapter, was adjudged the best for its membership and work among the county units in the nation. Its first president was the latest of this protective age, was Joseph E. Tenner, a prominent Negro resident. Its presidents for the past 15 years have been ministers. One of its members has been concurrently, evidently, I see when I wrote this, both vice president of the District of Columbia and the Virginia State NAACP. I was that person. And from 1956 and 57, I said, a Falls Church citizen was president of the Virginia State NAACP during the years of most of its controversial history. I was president then, and I used to talk before the legislature and led most of the lawyers' fights against the mass resistance, as we call it. Colored citizens in Falls Church have been active in support of many of the county community organizations for the welfare of people. Some have been officers in the Boards of Community Givers Fund, TBA, other health groups, and bond-seeking campaign. In fact, Ms. Wilkins and I started the County Health Organization, which eventuated in the hospital we now have. That is Miss Wilkins, who came from North Carolina, her first active work here. And I was the vice president of the committee set up to raise the $10 million that started Falls Church Schools on its the whole of Fairfax County Schools. In fact, we succeeded in getting colored and white people to vote for it, which was the first foundation to start the advance of the school system. There has always been communication between representatives of major and minor groups, and I mentioned Miss Sue Riddle and her brother, Reverend Riddle, his brother, were very helpful in colored churches. And the late Attorney Fenwick often lectured and sermonized at the Negro churches. Dr. Harold Johnson, with his often false church and ministers and sick of both races, has been an invaluable ally in bridging the gap between the races. You've seen his office down on Annandale Shreve Street, just before you get into Falls Church. Well, I would say he has almost as many white patients as colored patients. He's considered tops in his field. And he has a beautiful home called $37,000 right in an integrated section in Arlington. And he built those apartments next to it, and he built another one where a barbershop is. And he's done very well. He graduated from the University of Michigan in law, in medicine, and has been here and done very well.
What in the world is improving all of Shreve Street is what I've been...
Why they haven't improved
it? All of a sudden, it's been seeing so much improvement there from that. I was wondering what was going on there. Is that because of the county's been...
Where has been improved for that?
Well, I've seen all the substandard homes have been...
Oh, yes.
...removed and stuff, and it's been such a cleanup there.
Oh, yes, well, that is true.
Going on.
And you probably saw the new apartments that are going up there. Well, he's building two more apartments like that. And they are intended for Negro development. In fact, we got through the zoning commission at the courthouse here a few weeks ago the right to build 200 units that will mainly be occupied by colored people just west of the this National Cemetery on that Hollywood Road. And we are getting some very fine homes for Negroes in the area, not far, just it's Alexandria now, but used to be part of Fairfax County. I just wrote an article to support a man with a colored lawyer who's built 15 houses ranging $24,000 down on Fonda Road. And there's another building of 15 houses ranging, I guess, up to nearly 30,000 in that area that colored people have. And over in McLean area, a builder who's a brother, by the way, of Mr. Kennedy's administrator, Bob Weaver, who's administrator of public houses. His brother, his cousin, Blakely Weaver, has built some beautiful small, not too small, I guess the range of $20,000 in that area. So there's a great deal of that going on. In fact, I attended a meeting this morning Catherine Stone had with the Urban League at her Urban Center's place on 1726 Pennsylvania Avenue, where they were considering the whole metropolitan area for the need for colored homes kind that can pay for them because the slums of Washington, in fact, I wouldn't want to live in Washington now. It's dangerous to walk around in the streets now, and so many Negroes have come from the South who have been handicapped so long, no education, no job opportunity, no job training. They get in the city like that and without any moral persuasion, they easily turn into crime, and it makes the city have a bad reputation. As much as Negro preachers and everybody try to do, something must be done eventually to alleviate that condition, because that's the reason why so many young white people have moved into Virginia with their families. You got away from the traffic, laden streets, and carbon monoxide, have free space, which is ideal, and which I think a decent and respectful Negroes ought to be doing too, where they can get home so as to live the lives. I said the Falls Church community has never suffered by reason of crime or juvenile delinquency in the Negro community. Much of this is due to the splendid influence of the two churches and the long line of capable ministers. The present pastors, Reverend W. E. Costner of the Second Baptist Church and Reverend C. T. Wilson, when I wrote that, he's died. And the Reverend Otter is now the minister of this Methodist church, are active in civic movements. Homeowning was a virtue to the older colored citizens. Some of them had profited by reason of the latter-day development about Falls Church. Most notable was the sale of 40 acres at Seven Corners by the heirs of the late Fred Foote Sr., who purchased this ground for $500 because the Civil War recently sold it for $750,000. But and that was interesting from this point of view. Olaf Frederick, as we used to call him, is my grandmother's uncle. He had a will which said that this land shall remain in the Foote family as long as there is a Foote living. And for long years, nobody could touch it. But as improvements came around and the old log house they had on there, the taxes were getting so high with a little bit of money that they had that they would soon have been eaten up in taxes. So one of the heirs, the younger one, just went into court. And that type of will is illegal now and should have been, because you can see what would happen if you left this house, for example. As long as one of your children lived, eventually one would only own a foot of ground and it would get right over to the state. So they broke it and they sold it. And then another interesting factor of that was that one of the Foots lived in a little town in Cincinnati or Cleveland, one of those towns in Ohio, and he was in a barber shop, and he read one of the colored magazines about this sale. Well, he had been dead officially for about 20 years. In fact, the few lots he had around him had been sold under the, his wife lived here, under the thought that he was dead. He read this, he immediately came alive, and he had an awful time proving that he was actually the Joe Foote, one of the heirs. He got it, but he didn't live more than a year or two before he died, too. Until recently, the school facilities for colored children of Falls Church were disgraceful. But presently, the James Lee School, which is the school you see there, was erected. My wife was the principal of the first colored school. Not the first. She was principal of the building in which the first colored school was. It was a ramshackle place. They had no water on the premises. They had to get buckets of water, and my wife had a system of having each kid have his own little container, you know, where he hung up and drank out of. And she did a great deal, and she opened the school, but she retired right after that. And it's a very good school. They have everything you want in there. And our Luther Jackson School is a very fine high school up in Maryville. Before that, all of our children here who went to high school had to be driven all the way to Manassas, which is nearly 100 miles a day round trip going the way they did. But this Luther Jackson School is as good, I would say, as almost any school. In fact, they've added, since I just saw it the other day, they've added tremendously a new library and all. They've done a great deal. I said, currently Virginians, this is not history, but I said, currently Virginians are emotionally disturbed by the threat of school desegregation. No intelligent Negro accepts segregation as an American way of life. Having worked hard in his community and having offered his life and war as the defense of democracy in his nation, he intends to press onward towards full realization of the goal of complete citizenship. Until the barrier of color or races is removed, which limits his opportunity for employment, access to public accommodation, and deserving first-class citizenship, the sensitive Negro will continue to strive for his constitutional rights. The dedication of our new city hall and library have meanings as symbolizing justice and law and education to supplant ignorance and prejudice. Negro citizens, therefore, are equally proud of our new library and city hall, which they too helped to erect. Now, that was written at the time, as I said, right after I had read of the work done in the community that didn't consider that the Negroes had been in the community at all. Yet in the early part, they were considerably in here. One other factor that's mentioned in the literature here, this was a dead town until some Northerners came here. One of the first of the Northerners that came here was Emmy Church, whose son Guy, I know very well, who has a real estate place there. He came from Vermont. He came first to Herndon and opened up a store. Then he came to Falls Church and opened up the first drug store. And during the time of Camp Alger, he developed his business quite a bit. He was the originator of the telephone company. He was the originator of the telephone, the first telephone company he developed here, and then sold it to the C&P. He also developed the first electrical company here. And he had his own electricians. They strung the wires and they developed them. Then he sold that to the other company.
About when was that?
I can't remember, but it must have been about 1900, I would say, and let me see. Well, he developed it way back there in 1900, but I imagine that he had charge of it about 1910 or 12, somewhere in there. I know that there were four main stores at that corner. The church had one of them, and there was a tavern there that, in this literature, is very historical because it was the only place where travelers between here and the valley could get meals. And the first house that was erected in Falls Church, called the Thompson House or the Chimney House, was in that field right where the bowling alley is now off Broad Street. That was dated here, I can't remember the date, but that was the first house. It was called Chimney House because the whole side was a chimney on that side, and the whole side was a fireplace and chimney on that side. And they had, in fact, my grandmother's barn that was on that place where, as I said, my people have now. Oh, thanks. The eggnog is.
Yes, it is.
Funny thing is, I got some tonight at the co-op. First time to take home. Thank you. Anyhow, those houses were all built, you know, solid, big logs, and were put together with, big wooden spikes, pegs. The barn and all of them were built like that. I used to marvel at the way they used to put up those things. Interesting enough, too, in front of my house just last week, I hated to see it go. I had a maple tree there that was easily over 100 years old, and they've just cut that down last week. Down here at Munson Hill, where Mrs. Wilkins owned, and they're building a big apartment on Route 7, thank you. On Route 7, there was a man named Munson, who was also one of the former councilmen and originated of the town. The town didn't begin until 1875, Falls Church, as a town. And there were a great many interesting developments in there. For example, beside the legal part of settling boundaries and establishing laws, the real work to make it a cultural place to live in was done by what they call the Village Improvement Society, which was a group of white women who got money and developed all various things that would add to the life. And that was followed by another organization I can't think of, but that had a great deal to do with the development of the town. But this Mr. Munson, as I said, all these maple trees you see in the town growing along, these big maple trees that are dying now and being cut down, were set out by him as a community project. Now, as they are getting ready, in fact, I had to sell them 13 feet off the lot that I have in the village there. They're going to widen Lee Highway at the bank there to make that a four-lane road with a strip that's going to run all the way down, maybe from East Falls Church. I guess it will run from East Falls Church right straight through to Clark's Motor Place, which is down here by the quarry. And we went, some of the owners, and I was with them. We tried to get the State Highway Commission not to put a strip in the middle of that way so that the people at the Safeway and the people at Heckinges could cross over. If they put a strip there, you see, there'd be only very few places. I don't know that they're doing anything about it. But they have already bought the land. They're taking down that drugstore, as you know. All those people have had to move out of the drugstore at the corner.
And they rented for 5 years.
No. I was wondering.
Well, they had people upstairs.
Oh.
One of my lawyers, Pam Ananda, who's gone to that place, and that mountain lawyer, all of them.
Huh?
Van Meer, yes. They are all up there, but they've all moved away. I don't know whether the dentist moved yet or not. Maybe she has. It was the lady dentist up in the corner there. And then there were, for instance, General Lawton, who captured Aguinaldo in the Philippine insurrection. He used to live right back of State Theater. And that was quite a prominent place. And a place I see they're remodeling it on Broad Street where Milton Eisenhower lived. That was the old Rice farm house on Broad Street, and it had many acres back where these colored people lived. But somebody else has got it now, but Milton Eisenhower lived there, and General Eisenhower used to come out and visit him there quite frequently. And there were, along with Mr. Church, who came from Vermont, he invited a lot of New Englanders down here. I remember the town sergeant Crocker, and I remember the postmaster, I forget his name, but there was a postmaster from Vermont named Livingston for many years. The post office at that time used to be right about where the 5 and 10 cent store is, next there.
Robertson.
Yes, and right next to it was Mr. Lynch's feed store, which was quite a prominent place in those days of horses and cows and all. And the post office was in there, and then they built a little brick building, and the picture of that brick building is in the present post office, showing what it was then. And there were several people from New England, like the Eyes, the Dennis Gould lived back of my grandmother, and there were several of them. I can't remember all the names who lived in those houses. Most of the houses first were built along what they call Route 7, Broad Street West. And the Englands and the old Putin, a colonel of the Civil War on the Union side, a lawyer, I had him once for a case back in 1915 when this segregation case came up. He owned a place across the railroad now, beyond where that Christian Science Church is. And in his backyard is one of the original corners of the District of Columbia. You remember that by 1790, the District of Columbia included what is now Arlington County.
And it's what it built to up for the tower, isn't it?
Yes. One corner was in the Putin's yard up there near West Falls Church. The other corner was in Alexandria. And then it went across what is now Chain Bridge. And then they ceded it back before the Civil War to Virginia. And that is now Arlington County. But the Putin's place, I mentioned, was the first development outside of the middle of Falls Church. They called it Westwood. And homes were built, what's Lincoln Avenue and around that way, one of the first developments. Now all the fields I used to play on and swim, I learned swimming at the quarry down there, Trips Court, are practically villages. When I was a kid, there was plenty of game. And one other thing, too, that I miss is all along that road going up the country were these small truck farms. The people raised berries and various things, and then they'd get up 2 o'clock in the morning and haul all of those things into either Center Market, which is down on what now is Constitution Avenue, where either Al-Qaeda's one of those buildings is, or to the one in Georgetown. And when we had the farm up there, we had one of the finest apple orchards that came after we bought it. And I used to sell, I should say, about average, which is a lot of money in those days, $30 worth of cider and apples on the roadside. When my house was on Lee Highway, I moved it from that on Sundays and Saturdays. And I used to have wonderful dahlias that I used to raise down there, and people would buy those too. I was teaching them.
How big did you get them, the girls, the flowers?
Oh, well, they were dahlias. You know they grow very tall.
I've seen some at least 7 feet high.
Oh, they were tall. But the best dahlias are those you don't let too many of them come on the stem. This man Wells, who used to be on the town council, whose son is now the clerk of the town council, he grows some excellent flowers. He's trying to get his place zoned, too. One thing that's happened as a result of the development is that a lot of the land that some colored people own, that was right in commercial areas, they got a lot of money for it. I profited a good bit by that, too. Except Cornish, for example, but there's a boy right over here named Pope that's near this, between that filling station and that motel there. I understand he got about $90,000 for his land. And a girl I know up on Lee Highway there, she's gotten $80,000 or $90,000 for her piece of land. It wasn't worth anything. When I got my land there, it was worth, I guess, about $30-$40 an acre or so, or all our price like that. Well, that now, unless you want to ask me some questions, I don't know anything else I could tell you.
One thing I was curious about is I've heard that the Negroes took the